Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Chrissy Kiefer, has been creating social justice art for nearly all of her adult life. In 1975, she co-founded the Wallflower Order, the nation's first feminist dance company. The Wallflower Order eventually became Dance Brigade. This year, Chrissy Kiefer and her dancers are celebrating 40 years of feminist dance and activism with a new performance called Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time. The company's 23 dancers, taiko drummers, and folk singer and activist Holly Near will journey through the Americas via legendary protest songs and dance. Using the music of Holly Near, Woody Guthrie, Mercedes Sosa, and Nina Simone, the piece examines gentrification, immigration, political prisoners, and the history of slavery, along with movements of resistance, courage, and hope. In addition to co-founding the Wallflower Order and Dance Brigade, Chrissy also runs the Dance Mission Theater, an artist-led dance center serving 18,000 audience members and youth and adult students every year. And like so many artists, she has been hit with many, many rent increases over the years, and we'll talk about that on today's show. Chrissy is also artistic director of Girl Brigade, a dance and drumming empowerment program for girls 8 to 18. She's also won many grants and awards. And last but not least, she ran for Congress on the Green Party ticket with a mission to impeach George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for crimes against humanity, and we cannot forget that. Gracias a la vida is showing at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts this Friday and Saturday. Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 3 p.m. and 7:30. The Saturday matinee is $5, and other tickets range from $10 to $40. And you can visit yourcallradio.org for ticket information. And I am so happy that Chrissy Kiefer is joining me in studio. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi, good morning, good morning. If it is a good morning.
It is a good morning.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. I have to say that Dance Brigade really kept me inspired during the George W. administration because the women who dance for you are so powerful and incredible. And I will ask you what you're planning to do in the next 4 years. But first off, you are such a longtime activist. How are you feeling right now?
You mean in terms of the election and all of that? Well, I'm in the middle of making up this show, and I have all these fabulous performers, and I'm, you know, culling through my past 40 years and working with Holly Near, who I adore, and so I'm buoyed by that situation. The shining light in all of this is it's the year of the rooster coming up. And so that is supposed to be the new dawn. I am not really a new dawn kind of gal. I'm more of a like head to the hills and hunker down sort of, you know, this is the end of the world as we know it. But let's assume that we need a shining light and we need a silver lining. So year of the rooster is new dawn and people taking a stand and activism and coming out. So I'm excited. I mean, we can get into so much nuance of politics and how we all behave in the United States and, you know, in the arena of political thought. But I think that this might be a moment where we actually all super come together in order to challenge what is obviously a kind of a very extreme shift to the right with a lot of people in charge who actually don't have the capacity to run the government. Mm. So where does that leave us?
Well, where does that leave us? Because on the first week of our shows for 2017, we did a series of shows about resisting Donald Trump.
Right.
And a lot of people are saying this is a moment. In fact, yesterday, Robert Reich, who was the labor secretary under Bill Clinton, said that if the Democratic Party does not tap into this movement, then a third party is in order. This is Robert Reich saying this.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about that?
Well,
that?
I think that, I'm the third party candidate. I think that's a very interesting and super, super important idea in a trajectory of how we elect our leaders in the United States and in terms that we never have representation, even if a party is able to garner a huge amount of support, we don't get any representation really in Congress or any of that. You know, like the way they do in all over Europe is the Socialist Party has a huge influence. We don't even talk about socialism in this country without it being the dirty word, you know. So is it time for a third party? Maybe it's time for the Democratic Party to actually move into the 21st century and actually really listen and respond to what people are thinking and what people need.
And tell us, well, before we talk about what you're planning over the next couple of years to respond to all of this, you've got an amazing performance that's kicking off this Friday to celebrate your 40 years.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, this show is called Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time. And it was conceived to do a 40th anniversary show. And when we conceived it last, you know, April, or when was it? Maybe even in February. We were sure, like most of the Bay Area was sure, that we were going to have a female president. Hillary Clinton was going to be president. So we were just going to kind of ride the wave of the good vibes and kumbaya. Whether she was the perfect candidate or she's left enough, we were going to have, history was going to be made, and it was going to feel good for a lot of us here. That's not happening, and a whole other thing is happening. So I was going to show a series of works that were maybe not as so political and maybe a little more abstract and all of this, and then suddenly I felt, oh, I'm super tasked with trying to make sense of what just happened. Like, my audience is political. They're political, and they might enjoy me searching into other realms, but I think we need right now a kind of activist response to where we are all right now in terms of where our government is and what it means for women's rights. Mm. You know, the kind of hideous, in-your-face kind of anti-women behavior from the men who are coalescing in our government is beyond anything that we ever expected to see at this point in time.
Right, in the year 2017, because you co-founded the Wallflower Order, the nation's first feminist dance company, back in 1975.
Yes.
And here we are in 2017, where many Republican politicians oppose abortion, even in cases of rape and incest.
Yes.
Jeff Sessions' nomination is starting today. In fact, it's happening right now. Yeah. Jeff Sessions has been appointed or chosen by Donald Trump to be the next attorney general. And when Dianne Feinstein was questioning him this morning, she brought up abortion. Now, this has not really gotten much attention in all of the media coverage that Jeff Sessions has received. He called Roe v. Wade one of the worst, colossally erroneous Supreme Court decisions of all time.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So as someone who started this feminist dance collective back in 1975, how are you processing all of this?
How am I processing? Well, I like I said earlier, maybe it was off the air, I haven't had time to really process it because I'm in the throes of making this show, but I think it's something none of us expected, and I actually don't really know how to think about it, because I actually didn't even think Trump was really running a legitimate campaign. I actually thought he was sort of trying to clear the field for Hillary Clinton, because they're good friends. And she's going to the inauguration. So, you know, we're kind of on the, out here in California, we're on the extreme. But I have to go back to Obama, because I never agreed with Obama when he would say it's not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's the United States of America. And I feel like Obama's made an enormous amount of mistakes, didn't grab the bull by the horns from the beginning. The amount of senators has, we've lost like 12 or 15 senators. And so all of this kind of ideology around Obama was a problem. But that's really hard to say, because there's so much. You read Facebook and everybody's always so good looking and Michelle's so beautiful and the kids are so poised and all these great things that they've done. But let's really analyze the record here. Right. Let's analyze the record. And so, you know, we're all upset about Trump because it's such a slap in the face in terms of how we expect our president to behave, the decorum and all of that. But we are in a massive cluster, you know what, in the Middle East, in Syria, and we played a part in that that the left does not want to look at. We go around targeting leaders. We kill Gaddafi. We want to kill Assad. We want to kill Fidel Castro. We killed Osama bin Laden. Our goal is to go around and take out leaders we don't love. Hmm. And that's against international law. So I don't know where we really want to enter into the conversation on what part does the United States government play around the world. And if you asked anybody running for government, are you going to keep the United States as the number one imperial power, what would Hillary Clinton say? What would she say? Mm. Well, damned if you do and damned if you don't. So I don't know.
And next week, we're actually going to do – no, I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah,
it's important. We're going to do a week-long series about Obama's legacy. I think because Donald Trump – won the Electoral College, there haven't been that many conversations about Obama's legacy, other than the things you pointed out.
Yes.
He's leaving a lot of things for Trump.
Yes, to deal with. Yeah. Well, the whole Middle East is...
And power.
Yes. And, you know, the whole situation with Egypt, I mean, Egypt to the Arab Spring, and I have friends who live there, and there's just any kind of progressive activity in Egypt has completely collapsed and been incarcerated since the, quote, Arab Spring. So we actually, you know, we all weigh in on a situation there where the news we actually get on the Middle East is not that great, so... I don't know. I just feel like we need to be more careful in what bandwagon we jump on in terms of our national pride. Mm. You know?
Today, we're speaking with Chrissy Kiefer, who's been creating social justice art for nearly all of her adult life. You may have seen some of the Dance Brigade performances. This Friday, they are going to celebrate 40 years of feminist dance and activism with a new performance called Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time. And I hope you can see it because her dancers are so powerful and incredible. Taiko drummers are on stage. A folk singer and activist, Holly Neer, will be there. Friday at 7:30 at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, Saturday at 3 o'clock and 7:30, and the Saturday matinee is $5. That's another thing about activism and art in the Bay Area. So many companies do what they can to keep the prices low so everyone can enjoy the art. Always been important.
Saturday's actually almost sold out, so if you really want that $5 ticket price, I'm encouraging you to go to ybca.org. If you are have the means, please pay, you know, the top end of the ticket price on the other days, because it helps us actually support making tickets available for $5. For some of us, paying $40 for a ticket, but for other people, that's a super hard thing. So we're all in this together, and we have a wide range of ticket prices, and we encourage you to come and buy many and enjoy the show and rally with us at the show for a better tomorrow.
And if you have any questions or comments for Chrissy Kiefer, or you'd like to talk about the role that you hope artists will play during this time, what do you think is most effective? Yes, obviously we want artists to talk about the crucial issues of our day, but sometimes for me, Chrissy, I like to go to a dance performance to escape.
Yes.
And see what these beautiful bodies what they're capable of just kind of get lost in all of it.
Well, that's what I was trying to, you know, I started in March. I was going to just do a dance performance, which I have never done in my entire adult life, okay? But now I, you know, I had to shift and shift and morph and move the material into a more cohesive whole around some of the issues that we're dealing with. You know, so in your introduction, you described the second half of the show, which is the Gracias a la Vida show, which I just want to say that the musical director is Christelle Durandi, who's got a fabulous voice in her own right. And she's playing with three Bay Area musicians that are super great. But the first half is the Love in the Bitter Time half, and that's where we are right now. You know, we're having to find each other, feel good about ourselves, express the love, have the compassion that everybody talks about, but recognize that we're in a difficult and bitter time for a lot of the hard-won rights that we have tried to manifest and we see now are being eroded.
And talk a little bit about the process involved, because I was thinking a lot about dance. I love going to dance. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so lucky here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, we are.
What is the process involved? I mean, how has that changed for you over 40 years? When you sit down to put a piece together and you think about all of these issues that you want to infuse, but you also want to make it something that's really beautiful and powerful.
Well, I think that, you know, my work has developed over the year. When I started out with the Wallflower Order Dance Collective, we hammered it all out as a group every day in the rehearsal room. So, and it was a good process in some ways because none of us were really that skilled. So we were able to bring what we could do to the process, and then we would make these dances. It was difficult, and we fought a lot in that process. Then when the Dance Brigade happened, Nina and I grappled with the issues together and a lot of time with the input of the dancers. And now it's, you know, I'm really close with Lena Gachalian, who, you know, has been working with me since 1993. But, you know, I have the ideas of, or I have an image like the defection, deflection, devotion. I had three Cubans literally defect from Cuba to the doorstep of Dance Mission who lived and worked around there for 2.5 years. And so the piece, Defection, Deflection, Devotion, is about me observing their behavior and what it was like to move to from a small town in Cuba to the Bay Area and without any resources or money or ability to work because, you know, they didn't have green cards yet and all of that. And so that you know, just working with them and observing them and getting in the studio with them and their brilliant dancing, that's how that piece was created.
How did they find you?
Ramon Ramos Alayo brought them. And then they, from Santiago, which is where he went to school, he runs the Alayo Dance Company, and then they stayed. They just stayed because Cubans have a very specific relationship to immigration, wet foot, dry foot, because if they can get here, they actually have amnesty immediately. Yeah, you didn't know that. You should read all about that. Wet foot, dry foot, it's called. Because the United States did that in order to undermine the Cuban government and to lure as many people over to the United States as they could in order to undermine. But we just have to shout out to Cuba, who has sent more doctors and more dancers all over the world than any country in the entire world. You know, we can demonize Fidel. We can do all this. But when you look at the legacy of artists, I mean, every major dance company in the world has a Cuban dancer in it. That's unheard of. And principals, like soloist principals, the best dancers come out of Cuba.
Well, and this has always been important for you to run a multiracial dance company.
Yeah, super important. And Dance Mission, I think the success of Dance Mission is it's overlapping communities where each community there feels a sense of ownership, whether it's the lesbian parents and their girls from Girl Brigade or, you know, Alan Frias's hip-hop company Mind Over Matter or all the Cuban artists that I have there. Everybody hangs out in the lobby together. Everybody feels like the space is theirs. Everybody participates in making it happen. And, you know, it's you walk in and it just pulses with the kind of genuineness that you don't often feel in another dance studio that feels more sterile.
And we're lucky because many dance companies are diverse here in the Bay Area. I just watched the documentary about Misty Copeland.
Oh, yeah. That's so great.
It really is. The first black principal for the American Ballet Theater.
Yes.
What are women of color today still facing when it comes to dance and the arts community?
Well, I mean, there's so many levels. There's the economics. There's the choreography jobs, you know, which I'm in touch with because I'm a choreographer right now, not a dancer. But I think, you know, the ballet has a European aesthetic all over it. So it's what's been, quote, challenging for artistic directors is if you have, you know, 25 white swans and you have one black woman dancing, oh, it's distracting, rather than if you had half, you know, 20 black women, 15 white women, 5 Latinos and Filipino women who are, you know, all fabulous dancers, you'd have a whole different feeling and a different look and everybody would get used to it and actually it would be welcoming rather than alienating, you know. We could talk a long time about the aesthetics of ballet and the anorexia that goes along with it and the uber thinness, but I will just say, and we'll look back, Misty Copeland's participation will change the course of ballet and it will save it from itself. That's what's happening. It was either the ballet figure out how to get these fabulous women of color on stage or it was going to just implode because people don't care to go watch uber skinny women with no power and no strength.
And the documentary about Misty Copeland is a ballerina's tale. The first night when she was the principal dancer at the American Ballet Theater, almost the entire audience was black.
Yes, and that's what the ballet needs.
And she pointed out, and the people in the film said, this is so unusual, but this is what happens.
Yeah. And I also want to just take that back a little bit, what I said about, you know, power and strength. Ballerinas are super strong. They work super hard, and they are very capable of all kinds of activities and beauty. But there is an aesthetic that is a kind of demure and, underfed kind of anemic sort of look that goes into some of this. And I think that's what will change with women of color on stage.
You are a choreographer.
Yes.
And I did not realize this, but I've read in interviews, you have said that the 2015-2016 repertoire for the San Francisco Ballet, the New York City Ballet, and the Joffrey Ballet were all created by men?
Yes, that's what came out. And it wasn't me that pointed that out. It was Mara Kerr pointed that out. And then I started to investigate and we looked it up. And yeah, all the people are furious at the San Francisco Ballet because they don't have any female choreographers on the roster. Same way. So that's what I was saying when you asked about how it affected the ballet world, the dance world affected women of color. It's like, we'll just start with there are no women that choreograph for major ballet companies. All the jobs are men. 85% to 90% of the jobs go to men for high profile choreography commissions.
Why?
I don't know, because it's a sexist world and men know how to put themselves out there. People think that men are better choreographers. The invisibility of the, you know, the over 50 woman is huge in a culture overall. So it resonates back down to that.
What does it take? Like, what would it take for you to choreograph a piece for the San Francisco Ballet?
Oh, it would never happen. I don't just can't imagine that it would happen. But I want to make my own story ballets. After I do this, I'm going to make a story ballet again, because I love to make story ballets.
Like the Nutcracker.
Yeah. I'm going to make something. I've been thinking of like reworking Scheherazade. I'd like to tie it into the Middle East and work with some great composers. And I mean, there's a lot of like feminist themes in the Scheherazade. So I don't know.
What do we lose? I mean, because so many people go to the ballet and maybe don't think about what happens behind the scenes in terms of who's making the decisions. So what do we lose when
we lose the perspective of women. We lose the opportunity for women to make a living as choreographers. We lose, you know, we lose the woman leader in the studio working with the dancers. There's just wherever women's presence is, there's a transformative activity that takes place with whom that woman is around, and we lose that if all of the choreographers are always going to be men, and especially it's a women dominated field.
Right.
So that's where that's very incongruent.
And also, it's been 14 years since a woman was commissioned to create a main stage ballet at the Royal Opera House.
Yes, yes.
Are dancers and choreographers talking about this?
Yes, they are.
Because
But the fact that you're reading it means that somebody's talking about it. I mean, there was a blow up around Facebook because a lot of choreographers from the Bay Area when San Francisco Ballet put out its season was really unhappy with the fact that there were no women on the roster. I'm not paying that much attention to that because I have so much else to do, but there are a lot of other women super upset about it and refuse to go see the ballet because of that.
Do you think it's a good idea for people to express their opinions
absolutely.
About this to the ballet?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the ballet is a cultural institution in San Francisco that receives an inordinate amount of budget, but inordinate amount of money. They have a huge budget and they should have to respond to what the people around them want to see on stage.
Today, I'm speaking with Chrissy Kiefer. She has been creating social justice art for nearly all of her adult life. In 1975, she co-founded the Wallflower Order, the nation's first feminist dance company, and it eventually became Dance Brigade. And this year, Chrissy and her dancers are celebrating 40 years of feminist dance and activism with a new performance called Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time. And it'll be at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. The performances are this Friday and Saturday. Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 3:00 and 7:30. The Saturday matinee is $5, and those tickets are almost gone. And so if you'd like to go, you better get one soon. You can check out yourcallradio.org for more information. Before we go to break, how did you connect with Holly Neer to perform music on stage?
When Wallflower Order started in 1975, Laurel Neer was in the company in Eugene, Oregon. And so she brought Holly in to see our shows, and there was an immediate connection only because we were both heavy hitters, but we were both super involved in the women's cultural movement at the time. We were touring all over the United she was touring all over the United States, and so she formed a women's booking company called Red Roadwork, and they booked our first national tour.
Well, if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments for Chrissy Kiefer, who has been making dance and amazing performances in the Bay Area, we'd love to hear from you. And what are your thoughts about the role that you would like artists to play during this time? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. toll-free. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website. That's yourcallradio.org. And you can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. They'll be talking about the extension of the World Cup soccer allotment, as well as nepotism in the Trump White House. Stay tuned. El oído, que en todo su ancho,
graba noche y día. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, we will be talking about what a Jeff Sessions Department of Justice would look like. The hearings are taking place today and tomorrow. Jeff Sessions opposes abortion. He called Roe v. Wade one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time. He opposes bills to reduce mandatory minimums, referred to Islam as a, quote, toxic ideology. He backs Donald Trump's ban on immigration from Muslim countries. So tomorrow, we will talk about what stood out in the hearings today and what else we have to learn about Jeff Sessions. And then also, we are starting a new Book of the Month Club, and we're kicking it off with No Shortcuts, Organizing for Power in the New Gilded Age. It's by labor activist Jane McAlevey. She'll be joining us on January 24th, so I hope you can grab a copy of her book and join us with her your views and questions. That is January 24th. If you have any suggestions for our Book of the Month show or any show ideas, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions or comments for today's guest, Chrissy Kiefer, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the role that art plays in inspiring social change? What would you like to see from artists during these times that we're facing? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if you're an artist, we would love to hear from you. Chrissy Kiefer has been the choreographer of Dance Brigade for the last 40 years, and they'll be celebrating this Friday and Saturday with a new performance, Gracias a la Vida, at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 3, and Saturday at 7:30. The Saturday matinee is $5, and those tickets are almost gone. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I wanted to also ask you, Chrissy, about the role of arts, the struggle of artists in the Bay Area. And over the years, I've read and talked to you about the rent increases that right. you're facing at Dance Mission. What is the latest as so many artists are being pushed out?
Well, you know, we've suffered from kind of brutal rent increases since 19. Well, let's see, when did it really start? Like 4 years ago. It feels very unstable, and we do not have a lease. We've entered into an MOU. We are entering into an MOU with Local 648 at 16th and Mission, who owns a building there, who is willing to give us a 99-year lease if we do all of the build-out. So this is very exciting, and this is a new development where we might end up owning our own building. Hmm. The only problem is, at this point, is that new construction is almost prohibitive for an arts organization of our size. Our budget hovers around $1 million a year. So we're going to try to put all that together and figure that all out and see what comes of that. But we would love to have a permanent home for, you know, our institution of art and social justice. That would be great.
We did a show about the tragedy at the Ghost Ship.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
since then, I've been reading about a lot of warehouses that are yeah. getting shut down. And so yeah. many artists yeah. have been really kind of yeah. shocked because the crackdown has come so quickly.
Right.
There was actually an article in the Chronicle the other day about a longtime artist in the East Bay who's going to be kicked out. What are you hearing from artists? And how do you think that the community should respond to this?
Well, I haven't actually been hearing that much, but I think that's partially because I'm in San Francisco in the Mission, where that situation I don't think exists quite as much. But, first of all, it was a horrible tragedy, what happened. Unprecedented, and hopefully nothing like that ever happens again. What does it mean? It will mean that they will start disbanding all of the renegade artists that live in warehouses that aren't up to code. And we will see those buildings probably taken over by developers and turned into high-end housing. That's what I imagine will happen. Mm. I think it will be a new wave of displacement that will happen because the city will be entitled to start moving into buildings almost without search warrants, just based on, you know, the fire marshal's coming, get ready kind of situation. Yeah, I mean, people have been squatting in housing since as long as I've been an activist. So the ghost ship is nothing new. Clearly, there was negligence and magical thinking that did not pan out for all the people involved there. But I think we can see a new wave of, you know, I'm actually calling what's happening in the Bay Area kind of a corporate takeover of the real estate that people don't really want to name.
Mm. I was going to ask you, since you've been in the mission for so many decades, how do you think city officials should respond to what's happening to artists?
Eminent domain. I actually think they should start seizing buildings based on eminent domain, and then nobody's got the guts to do that. They should actually seize 24th and Mission based on eminent, my building, only because it's been a movement arts center since its entire inception, you know, for 50 years there, over the last 50, and I think even back to when it was first created in the 30s.
And I've read that the current monthly rent at your building, Dance Mission, on 24th Street is $11,500 a month?
It's $12,000 now, and it'll be $12,500 next year.
$12,000 a month?
Yes, it's terrible.
How do you do it?
I sweat blood. It's so hard. No, it's super hard. You know, I'm successful in terms of that my programs I'll make, you know, are healthy. I have healthy programs. But it's you know, I feel like I have PTSD from running an arts organization. It's wow. Not easy. And the only reason that we, you know, everybody in my office has rent control. So and have been long-term renters and have lived in the Bay Area for a super long, in San Francisco for a super. So without rent control, we would not be there because our salaries are not competitive, you know. So what did I hear? The mean income of San Francisco now is $94,000 a year.
Median,
wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if you're paying $12,000 a month in mm-hmm. rent, you provide dance classes, mm-hmm. and then you put on performances.
Yes, but, we have a theater.
Right. And so this $40 ticket price, I mean, does that help you? I always wonder
yes,
about that.
Yes, but also, you know, renting YBCA, Yerba Buena, is super expensive, too. Uh-huh. But we did get some good grants. We got money from the Rainin Foundation. Shout out to the Rainin Foundation and the Fleischacker Foundation and Grants for the Arts. So there was some money that we got to make it happen. But, you know, it's expensive. We pay all the dancers and all the tech people and all the musicians, and we try to pay them well so, you know, people can make a living doing this.
Mm. And then also putting on, let's say, a two-day, three-performance
yes.
weekend.
Yes.
How much work does that involve behind the scenes?
Yeah, we've been rehearsing. Well, some of these pieces are, you know, been in our repertoire for a while, so we don't count that. But we've been rehearsing pretty much nonstop since the middle of September.
September.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot
yes,
of work.
A lot of work. Yeah, there's a lot of people involved, and it takes a while to kind of get in a groove and make it happen together. Yeah.
Let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show. Do we have Chris?
Hello?
Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, I just really want to thank Chrissy and acknowledge her for her amazing body of work. I studied dance and performance as an undergrad, and I was able to squat in a warehouse legally here in San Francisco. And she's been such an inspiration to me over the years. I'm now a psychology postdoc and able to continue to live and work here in San Francisco because of rent control. And a really profound influence a piece of your work had on me was your beautiful illustration of the Bardo. And I can't encourage you enough to go in the direction of Scheherazade. I think you would do a beautiful job with that.
Mm.
I had the incredible good fortune of being with you at Tara Mandala for Gubchen a few years ago, and I was wondering if you could talk about the influence of that philosophy on these times.
Well, thank you. Nice to hear your voice. Let's see. I started studying Tibetan. It's so weird that you brought this up because I started studying Tibetan Buddhism in 1996 with Tara Mandala with Sultram Alioni, and I was going to be a yogini. I was so inspired. I was going to be a dakini. I was going to go into a retreat, and I was going to change the course of history from my retreat cabin. And then, you know, that's harder to do actually than run Dance Mission. So I kind of backed off from that. But as I was driving over here, I was thinking how weak my practice was at this time, and that maybe once I was done with this show that I would actually head somewhere and go into retreat for a couple weeks and try to figure out what I was doing. So maybe this call from you is actually to reignite that. But, you know, I think Buddhism actually has had a huge impact on the left in the United States, and somebody could really do a whole show on what influence has Buddhism had on the left. You know, even all the way back to Allen Ginsberg, who was infused, wrote very political poetry when it was also a very big Buddhist. And so what is that the left has gravitated towards Buddhism, and what has the thing of nonviolence, how has that affected, you know, all of our work, and how has, you know, can't we all just get along philosophy affected all our work, and, you know, all of those kind of things. So, that's all I can really elaborate on that right now.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for calling in, Chris. And we have one of my other favorite Bay Area artists on the line next, Rodessa Jones, who runs the Medea Project. Hi, Rodessa.
Hey, Chrissy, this is fabulous.
Oh, thank you, Rodessa. Back at you, babe.
You know, I just was listening to you talk, and I was thinking about Wallflower Order.
Yes.
You know, tumbleweed came up to Oregon, remember?
Yes, of course I do.
We had an invitation from Wallflower Order to be up there performing. I think it was Reed College.
Yeah, that's Portland. No, you came to the WOW Hall.
Yes,
and the WOW Hall.
I just want to say that,
yeah,
I feel like there's been such an incredible line of energy that has brought me to the work that I'm doing now, that you were so central in the beginnings, that a woman's life and a woman's work and through the artistic process could be so powerful and so fertile. And I'm just so moved to hear you talk and to feel like I'm a part of this feminine history, the history of the vagina, you know, in the art world, and you were so instrumental.
In wow, thank you. Well,
insight and telling this young black woman that, hey, there's a place for you. There's a place for all of our voices, and
wow.
And your work over the years has just reinstated that. It's just helped me to constantly invest in my own work, and I want to just say, let us push for this this whole thing of taking over buildings. I don't know. I think we can do it.
Yes, I think if we could find the right move into the city government in some kind of way, that if we banded together enough, we probably could really have an effect. But you know, thank you, Rodessa. That you just made my day completely. And I just want to say, you know, I did produce, the Wallflower Order did bring Tumbleweed up. Tumbleweed was from the Bay Area in 1975, yeah. And I went to see them at Mini Can Do, and I was just like completely blown away by them. And Rodessa came to University of Oregon, and I remember the performance. She stood on the middle of the stage because she had just joined, and she just turned slowly in a circle for an hour, and I was completely blown away. And I sat in that performance, and I said, if they can do this, I can do this. So it's a feat.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a mutual. It's a feedback session back and forth between all of us artists in the Bay Area. And I think that, you know, we can all go to our graves saying that we got to produce and make art in the Bay Area, one of the most amazing places on the planet. And for that, that's the Gracias a la Vida part of my performance, where I am. It's a big thank you. And thank you, Rodessa, for all the work that you've done.
And thank you, and I will be there Saturday.
Yay, good. I'll talk to you after the show.
Okay, be well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rodessa. Rodessa runs the Medea Project, and she's been on the show many times, works with incarcerated women, and does incredible work.
Incredible work. Incredible. She's an icon. She is an icon in the Bay Area.
I know you're all really busy working on your projects, but do you get together with other social justice artists?
I get together with artists. You know, the best thing about Dance Mission is the open door policy of the office. Sometimes we think it's a little too open, but, you know, we have people walking in our office and sitting down and talking to us all the time. So, you know, I know there's a lot of formal kind of panels and all of that, and I did hear Rodessa speak on a formal panel at Dance Mission with Amara Tabor Smith and other people. But I would say that I sit in consort with, you know, Keith Hennessy, Sarah Shelton Mann, the women that run the Black Choreographers Festival, Ramon Ramos Alayo. You know, we're all there all the time trying to figure it out. I think dance is probably the most collective art because we actually have to have a lot of people in order to do our work. Mm. It's not like we're painting alone and then we put a show up and everybody comes. It's like we are constantly sharing dancers, sharing designers, sharing choreography ideas, choreographing for each other, stealing each other's ideas. It all happens here in the Bay Area.
Mm. Today, we're joined by Chrissy Kiefer, who is celebrating 40 years of creating feminist dance. She co-founded the Wallflower Order back in 1975. It eventually became Dance Brigade. And this weekend, Chrissy and her dancers are celebrating with a new performance called Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time. And it'll be Friday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts at 7:30 and Saturday at 3 o'clock. That show is $5 and Saturday night at 7:30. Other tickets range from $10 to $40. And the Saturday matinee is almost sold out, so you might want to get a ticket now. You can visit yourcallradio.org for more ticket information. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you're an artist, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on how you plan to respond to what we're dealing with right now, what we're about to deal with? What are your thoughts about the relationship between politics and art? And if you'd like to talk about how Bay Area artists are struggling, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Do you think that artists have a greater responsibility in times like these?
I feel like we already are tasked with so much responsibility because we're all tasked of trying to make incredible work that will garner a following, first off. But then we're tasked with running a business at the same time. So most of us are doing business-related activities a good half time of our life. So, and not only do we have to do all of this business activity, we have to be accountable. Our bookkeeping at this point has to be immaculate. So we have to be accountable around how we're spending our money for sometimes not very much money. I mean, it's not like we're all getting these $100,000 grants or the city is paying half of our budget. We're talking about draconian sort of accounting for $20,000. And that takes up a lot of time and it's trying, and it also, you know, puts us in competition with each other. You know, there's a call for grants. There are $20,000 grants. There's 40 of us that apply. So I feel like we're so responsible. Anybody who's still surviving has been uber responsible. I think that what's different right now is the funders. For the first time, as far as I can tell, except maybe when they did that thing in the 30s or the war, you know, what was that that kind of cry that the government did?
Oh, the WPA.
Yeah, the WPA. The funders are all asking for social justice work at this point across the board. They want to see their dollars go to solving the problems of either the inner city, the problems that women have, the police brutality. They want to see their dollars going toward that, and they want the artists to be focusing on that. Now, that's a really great thing, but also not everybody's equipped to make that kind of art. So it's got an edge to it that's not necessarily that helpful as well.
What about independence? Are there any strings attached to the money?
Just through the kind of accounting that somebody must do in order to get the money.
Mm. Yeah. Now, since you started the Wallflower Order back in 1975, when you think about art creating social change, what really stands out for you in terms of a piece that really made an impact or the greatest impact?
Of someone else's work?
Of my own work and then someone else's work.
Well, you know, when I was talking about Holly Neer, I think that, you know, I was ran parallel and intersected also with the women's music phenomena of the 70s and 80s, which included Farron, Sweet Honey in the Rock, Holly Neer, the Berkeley Women's Music Collective, Mary Watkins, Linda Tillery, and that whole genre of artists. I was part of that. that had a huge influence on me, because we were grappling not only with, you know, social justice issues and what's fair, which women and lesbians love to talk about what's fair or not, but we were also grappling with our sexuality and all of those kind of things. So that was the foundation of my of making my work. And then, you know, I had the great honor of touring all over with Grupo Raíz in the 80s, and we raised an enormous amount of money for Chile, El Salvador, Nicaragua as part of the Solidarity Movement. And that had that political activity and that artwork had a huge influence on me. And yeah, so I mean, I've just, Alvin Ailey had a huge impact on me. First time I went to a dance concert and cried, and it was 1971. Wow. You know, I was sitting up in the balcony in New York City. It wasn't even full. You know, that had a huge impact on me. I saw the Living Theater in the 70s, and that was like, when I saw them, that was everything I didn't want to be. I was right up there in their practice, you know, and they would like call rehearsal at 10, and then two people would sit on the stage and wait for everybody to show up by 1 o'clock. And I was like, I can't handle this.
You also run Girl Brigade,
yes,
which is
I do.
A dance company and drumming empowerment program for girls 8 to 18. How do you talk to young girls who want to be artists at a time when not only is it extremely difficult to be an artist and make ends meet, but there's so much focus now on, you know, learning to code and learning tech? And I think a lot about Patti Smith's memoir.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When she went to New York City in the 70s. And anybody could go there, and you could live for $100 a month, and you could really try and follow your dream. And it's so hard to do that now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of what, you know, these warehouse spaces are, you know, which are places for people to cohabitate that aren't expensive. That's why they're super expensive. It's a super important part of our ecosystem that people have low-income housing. So
young
girls, I don't know what to say to
them.
I encourage them, you know, the ones that actually end up dancing full time. A lot of our students go into the School for the Arts, the Ruth Asawa School for the Arts. So they come out with perhaps professional aspirations. But almost all of my girls actually end up going to college. I would say that 95% of them go to college. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them drop out right away, but there's a big push in among them with each other and their parents that they attend college. And so, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge college fan if you want to be an artist. I feel like dive right in and go back to school when you can't dance. Dance is so much about being young at this point, you know. Mm. So I'm like, get in there and dance. But, you know, you can't really make a living as a dancer. Very few people get to make a living as a dancer.
And most of your dancers have other jobs?
Yes, everybody has another job.
And hopefully rent control?
Yes, or living with people that are supporting them or living with their parents. A lot of people still live with their parents.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Mariah in Oakland. Hi, Mariah.
Hi, I'm such a big fan, Rose, and such an important conversation. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to advocate along with, you know, the huge importance that professional artists play in our society to help reflect back to us another level of what's happening. I just want to advocate, as a student of expressive arts therapy, the importance of everyone finding spaces in which they can create art themselves and to allow themselves that space to use color and symbol and imagery, their bodies, be it take an improv theater class or just, you know, start even all these, the popularity of coloring books, but particularly to make your own art right now is a way to help get out what is inside us in these tumultuous times, and that it isn't just for professionals. It really is for all of us as human beings to have the creative voice within us be expressed.
Yes, I agree with that. Thank you for saying that. I think that's super important. I think that the more of us that are able to tap into that space, the more we actually can have a society that reflects our greatest humanity. Yeah, thanks. That's really important.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you,
Mariah. You trained in ballet from the time you were six.
Yes, I did.
And you're still in some of your pieces, right?
Well, I talk in my pieces.
Okay.
I don't dance anymore. I had a hip replacement and I'm old. Too old for that.
Talk a little bit before we end just about the art of just the dance. I'm not talking about the politics or anything, but the body.
Yes.
Because it's amazing when you just watch dance what the body is actually capable of doing.
Yes. Well, I did train in ballet at six in South Carolina and then Cincinnati, and then went to the University of Oregon. And my daughter's a dancer and my mother's a dancer and my cousins are all dancers. So I had that as a kind of a baseline activity in my family growing up. I think that, you know, one of the most amazing things about this show that we're doing now is the kind of young and beautiful dance, the range of age, for one. The people on stage range from 19 to 64. So that 67, I think. So first we have the huge range of age there. And then we have a whole cadre of young dancers who are phenomenal movers and who have trained super hard and work really hard to be good dancers, and that's really fun. And I think that, you know, what dance does is it expresses something intangible that actually causes kind of you to wake up to yourself when you either do it or you watch it. There's a kind of energetic field that happens, not unlike the Dakini principle in Tibetan Buddhism, where it's kind of opens you up. And it, at the same time, I think that the work can soften you and move you into a bigger sense of yourself.
And at this time when so many of us sit a lot.
Yes, we do.
It's so important to move.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, even though people think, you know, kind of can, I actually think So You Think You Can Dance has had a huge impact, because all kinds of dance styles are in people's living rooms and people talk about dance and are interested in watching dance in a way they haven't been for a long time.
And any performances you're excited about in the coming months?
Well, we have a festival at Dance Mission called DIRT, Dance in Revolting Time, and there's a lot of great artists. So check that out when we get through this, which we'll be done with this on Sunday. Yay!
Yeah. When is DIRT? Because that's a great
performance. That's the end of March, beginning of April.
Okay, and that's a number of choreographers and dancers show mini works.
And I think we've got you on board to host one of those evenings. Yay!
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
Yeah.
Anything else coming up? Or any?
Well, you know, the Black Choreographers Festival is at Dance Mission in right before DIRT, so that's at the end of February. There's the Cuba Caribe Festival, happens in April. Come see our Girl Brigade show and see what we're talking about when we talk about female empowerment through dance and drum.
And so despite all of the difficulties that we're facing right now, dancers and artists are still putting out amazing works in the Bay Area.
Amazing. And it's Greg Dawson's show is at YBCA. Go see that. His dancers are incredible and his work is so good.
And it's so, so important for us to support artists and performances.
Yes. Thank you.
And you can do that by going to the performance that is happening on Friday and Saturday. You can find information about Gracias a la Vida, Love in a Bitter Time at yourcallradio.org. Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 3 o'clock and 7:30. Chrissy Kiefer has been creating social justice art for nearly all of her adult life. She is celebrating 40 years of Dance Brigade this weekend. Chrissy, thank you for all of your amazing dance and art and activism.
Thank you.
And
so
thank
much,
you so
Rose.
Much. Thanks
what
for coming in.
What a great interview you did.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Coming up tomorrow, we will be talking about what a Jeff Sessions Department of Justice would look like. Jeff Sessions opposes abortion. He called Roe v. Wade one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time, opposes bills to reduce mandatory minimums. He referred to Islam as a toxic ideology and backs Donald Trump's ban on immigration from Muslim countries. So what questions have been asked today? What has been revealed? And what do we still need to know about Jeff Sessions? We hope you can join us tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. Malihe Razazan produced today's show, and Helena Murphy is our researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. It's Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.